Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. We're kickstarting the week in New York City, where the art newspaper's Charlotte Burns is poised, ready to tell us about the latest and greatest art exhibitions on show now. On the programme today, we'll be investigating the ancient art of the Hellenistic period at the Met. We'll have a playful reimagining of a Japanese tea ceremony by American artist Tom Sachs, and we'll find out what on earth a psycho barn is. All that ahead on the Monocle Arts Review. Do stay tuned. And without further ado, we welcome Charlotte Burns to the programme, coming to us live from our New York bureau. Charlotte, welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me.
We should say also, we're going not back to the future, we're just going back, far back. We're going back to the beginning of art itself, perhaps, the Hellenistic period. We're going to the Met Museum. I know this is a show that you loved. So talk us through how they've done this show so right.
Well, they've seized the opportunity to put the show on, for starters. That was their first great move, because the Pergamon Museum in Berlin is one of the world's leading collections of antiquities. But the building's been badly damaged since the Second World War, and it's been waiting for a kind of long overdue renovation, which is now happening. So the Met jumped in at this opportunity because the collection's mainly off limits to the public in Berlin until around 2019. So the Met now has had the chance to put its hands on some of those prized objects in the collection, and has around a third of the collection on show, I think 73 pieces from the Pergamon. So it's really an unprecedented loan, and one we're unlikely to see again. It's really more circumstantial than anything else.
Was there something specific that the Pergamon, that the Germans collected, that the Americans, that the British didn't? When we think of these august museums, it's similar, I guess, to the British Museum here in London. Can you see a different eye for the prize that maybe the Germans had during that period?
Well, it's quite interesting because the Hellenistic period, for some reason, isn't one that we're all as familiar with as we are with the Roman, for example. And I don't really know why that is. I think it's just, again, the kind of vagaries of history and fate, the way things turned out. I mean, Pergamon itself was discovered almost by chance by a German archaeologist, and his diligence is what meant that the works ended up in Germany. So it wasn't necessarily that the Germans were more poised to, you know, interpret that period of history. I think it was just, you know, this one person was working so hard. I mean, that's my understanding of it. It might be incorrect. He's the reason that a lot of those works went to Berlin. And it's a great opportunity for the Met here to see these works and have them. And it's the first major show in the Greek and Roman department since the Met had a renovation there in 2007, which was a huge sort of $220 million overhaul. So it's nice to see those galleries get a bit of attention. To look at work that, you know, frankly, I haven't seen before was really fantastic.
So how do they stage this? This is the Greek and Roman galleries are the Tisch galleries, right, at the Met. How are these works displayed? Have they kind of updated the way in which we look at these things? Is the lighting, are the plinths kind of different? Are they behind glass, or can you almost reach out and touch them? What's the style of the show, Charlotte?
Well, you walk through the beginning, there's a huge map showing you, you know, where Pergamon, where this exhibition is set, and the spread of the Hellenistic Empire, which was vast. That's part of the reason that this period is so interesting, because it doesn't really have a style per se, because Alexander the Great was, you know, he went through the world and conquered lots of different lands, and in turn brought back with him various tastes, and they were assimilated. You see lots of different styles going on in this period and a kind of merging of them. All of them with an eye towards beauty. I think one review has described it as, you know, history's 1%, because these aren't the art collections of, you know, the average person during the Hellenistic period. These are, you know, the super rich and the things that they bought. There's some great things that came from a shipwreck that they found just off the coast. And these were works that were presumably being bought to art collectors for their choosing, and have been found in the bottom of the ocean and now are on show at the Met. So that's great. There's a kind of video wall which shows you what Pergamon would have looked like, a computer simulation, which is absolutely gorgeous, kind of Greek. You know, it's sort of looking to Athens and the Acropolis and the glory of that when they built Pergamon. Now it's obviously a ruin, but you can see the former splendor. There's something slightly melancholic about the exhibition, in the sense that, you know, the fortunes of that territory of the world have changed so drastically over the centuries. And it's sort of sad in a way to see how glory changes hands from one nation to another, and here's all that's left really of it, and it's on show in the Met looking you know, absolutely spectacular and sumptuous and completely beautiful, some of these sculptures.
You're right. I wonder how many sort of super collectors will cast their eyes over this stuff now that it's on show in the Met as well. It's interesting to see who owned it then and who looks on it now, and whether they're sort of similarly public and wealthy figures. That's Pergamon and Hellenistic Kingdoms. Ha ha. Arthur Who of the Ancient World. That's on at the Tisch Galleries. It's on at the Met until July the 17th. It's Charlotte Burns' first choice. We're staying at the Met, Charlotte, but we're going upstairs. We're going on the roof. This is an interesting one. The always fascinating Cornelia Parker, British sculptress. Talk us through this unusual piece.
Well, this is kind of great to see in juxtaposition with Pergamon. You get an elevator up to the top of the Met and you go from one former seat of power to a current seat of power and overlook all of New York in its, you know, its own glory as you're sitting right next to Central Park. And Cornelia Parker's taken that vista and for the annual rooftop commission, which is something the Met's been doing for a few years now to varying degrees of success. Some projects have worked spectacularly well in the space, others less so, although it's always to be praised for that sort of risky manoeuvre. I think it was really the Met's first foray into contemporary art, and we all know that it now has a new building dedicated to that and is working on a wing. So from great seeds. And this year we have Cornelia Parker, and she's known often for exploding things. You know, she took that famous garden shed and exploded it and caused everybody to pause and think about material in that sense. She's very good at getting in between objects and their meanings. So whether she took a Wikipedia page of the Magna Carta, froze it, turned it into a huge tapestry involving 200 people and kind of reimagined the meaning of the Magna Carta. And here what she's doing is, instead of exploding something, she's creating and merging. When she was asked to do this, she apparently started thinking a lot about red barns and everything that they stand for, how wholesome they are, the fact that politicians often want their pictures in front of a red barn with a small child and perhaps a dog so that they look clean and, you know,
countryside. Look a good, like, yeah. Good, firm agricultural stock.
Pure and healthy. But she decided she couldn't fit a barn on the roof of the Met. That might be a bit too ambitious. So she started researching from there, started thinking about Edward Hopper, and found that Edward Hopper had painted this particular house, and that house had in fact been the inspiration for Hitchcock in Psycho. And then that sort of brought her back to a red barn, and she thought, well, why don't I merge all of those things? And so she's got a Hopper house that inspired Hitchcock and has taken parts of a disused barn and built it on the roof of the Met. So it's lots of composite things to become something totally new.
This is an amazing, striking thing. Obviously, people will know Norman Bates's house, the house on the hill in Psycho, which is what to most people what it looks like. It's so therefore it is a spooky thing. It is a kind of piece of architecture weighed down by dread. Does it feel as homely as a barn to you, or does it feel frightening, like a haunted house, or like a Psycho's house to you?
I mean, it's definitely creepy because you're like, oh my God, I remember seeing that movie.
I know
and being
that,
scared
yeah.
out of my mind. So you definitely feel odd seeing it. And, you know, the Met at the top of the roof has this quite cute, slightly incongruous, you know, privet hedge going around the top of the wall that prevents people from lurching off, I suppose. And it looks kind of minuscule next to the backdrop of the Central Park, you know, flora and fauna itself. So you have this sort of creepy house from a hill that's sitting atop, you know, Central Park, and again it's sort of this idea of deterioration, and it looks, you know, completely out of place because you see all these skyscrapers in, you know, the same view in your peripheral vision, and then you have this house. And also she's you know, emphasized the fakeness of it, because only from one angle does it look complete. As soon as you walk around the side, you see all the scaffolding that's propping it up, which is what Hitchcock did when he made the house. He only had it realistically built from one side, and the rest of it was just propped up, totally artificial Hollywood film set on a hill. And so now this is another Hollywood artificial film set on the top of the Met. So it's kind of great.
That is Cornelia Parker's Psycho Barn. That's on the roof of the Met until the end of October. Finally, let's have tea, Charlotte. Take us to Queens and talk us through this one. Sounds fascinating.
This is the first time in the Noguchi Museum's history that it has offered a solo exhibition to another artist than Noguchi since it opened in 1985. So we have Tom Sachs, which is a bit of an unusual choice in many ways, because you think of Noguchi and you think of these, you know, quite beautiful, polished sculptures. And you think of Tom Sachs and you think of these very roughly hewn, deliberately sort of cack-handed sculptures, and they aesthetically are quite different. Then you realise, or through the wonders of the press release from the museum, but the reason they chose Saxe is because there are similarities in terms of both artists' vision. So the output that they both created was very different, but their thinking was certainly in some ways aligned. So Noguchi had said, you know, to be hybrid anticipates the future. Saxe is nothing but hybrid. He takes his favourite mode of working is bricolage, to take an already existing object and kind of cobble it together into something totally new. There's that idea of hybridity in his work and in Noguchi's. Noguchi also looked at art as something useful, and Saxe is, you know, he insists on making objects and remaking objects. And also Noguchi said, one of his quotes is, consult NASA, and Saxe has been completely obsessed with space for years. And, you know, this work comes from an earlier work he did, which looked at the NASA space program and a sort of space mission that Saxe has been creating here in Manhattan.
There is so much going on in this show. Let's give our listeners a 1 minute skinny on what they see before them when they walk into the Noguchi Museum for this Tom Saxe show, Charlotte.
So he's recreated the Japanese tea ceremony in a new Tom Saxian kind of way. So you have all the various stages of a tea ceremony, but reimagined. So at one stage, you have all the bowls. He's crafted everything from the tea making objects, there's hundreds and hundreds of bowls that he's crafted, through to the various stages that you walk through in a traditional ceremony, and he's reimagined them. There's a koi carp pond that he's reimagined, there's different helmets that he's made, there's sculptures, you know, he's recreated a tree, but instead of it being from, you know, sort of beautiful objects, he's made it from enema pipes and Q-tips and recast it in bronze. There's a reimagined toilet, which is traditionally linking to the idea of washing your hands and cleansing as part of the tea process, but here it's, you know, looking like it's like an airline toilet, a toilet on a plane, which sort of makes you want to vomit rather than be clean. And so he's taken lots of these different ideas and riffed on them and made them all himself, and you follow the procession of the typical tea ceremony, but just in a very different, slightly absurdist reimagining.
I love it. And also, I have not used the word bricolage in a while. Thank you for reintroducing that into my palate for the week ahead. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Tom Saxe. And woe betide the man that tries to ask Charlotte about Tom Saxe and gets them very mixed up indeed. So we talked there about tea ceremony. It's Tom Saxe's show at the Noguchi Museum in Queens in New York City. That runs until the 24th of July. Before that, we talked about transitional object, Psychobarn in brackets, by Cornelia Parker. It's on the roof of the Met until the end of October, and down in the Tisch galleries of the same museum in New York City, you will find Pergamon and the Hellenistic Kingdoms of the Ancient World on until July the 17th. It doesn't get more classic than that. Thank you very much to Charlotte Burns, US News Market and Business Editor at the Art Newspaper. Head to theartnewspaper.com for all the latest art world headlines. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds, and the show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our music review, but for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you for tuning in.